Welcome to session 6 of The Road of Wisdom. We're going to be talking in this session about finding wisdom. As a boy, I loved to look at the Where's Waldo books. I could open a book and sit with one of the ultra-crowded pages with a sea of people and just give it my full attention. What seemed like maybe just forever, I just sat there looking at the book. My eyes would move slowly from side to side and then from top to bottom. And I'd be tracing every little figure in the page, every little detail, every patch of color, just hoping to catch a glimpse of that very familiar red and white striped shirt and hat. It became kind of a mission for me, because when I found him, I felt like I'd actually accomplished something great. I knew Waldo was always there, somewhere. The challenge was finding him. Sometimes I would find him quickly. More often, though, it took me a while. I would scan the page once, and if I didn't find him, then I'd start over. And then I'd scan it again, and yet again, if I still couldn't find him. I thought maybe what I'd missed the first time, I would surely catch the second. And then what escaped me the second time would have to show up on the third. So I kept doing this with like greater concentration and squinting of my eyes and slowing down and using my finger, to try to keep track of where I was focusing. I refused to give up until I had discovered where Waldo was hiding. Yet there were times when even my best effort seemed futile. The page was just too crowded, it was too busy, too many things going on, too distracting. Waldo blended in so well with everything around them that, he might as well just have been invisible. Eventually, though, most of the time, after enough frustration, I would do what every determined person hates to do. I would flip to the back, and I would look at the hint or the answer. With just a little peek in the back, I could finally spot what apparently had been in front of me all along. The problem was not that Waldo did not exist, or that he wasn't right there in front of me. The problem was that he was hidden. He was buried within the noise of the page and all the people. For many people, they think or they imagine that wisdom is something like Waldo. You have to work really, really, really hard to find it. The common perception is that wisdom is something difficult, something that's elusive, that's like tucked away from ordinary people, and it's reserved for only the most exceptionally perceptive and intelligent. Something that's maybe hidden in the fine print of life or camouflaged along life's complicated journey. We might think that finding it requires a special kind of squinting or relentless scanning or a talent for decoding what is there but is not immediately apparent. We fear that unless we look harder or search longer than the average person, we won't find it. Well, wisdom is not Waldo. Wisdom's not hiding in a crowd. It's not dressed in disguise, hoping to avoid discovery. It does not toy with us out from the corner of a page behind a sea of details, waiting for only the sharpest eyes to notice it. Wisdom does not require endless scanning from side to side for those who are seeking it. Wisdom does not seek to frustrate us, but to guide us. Wisdom has not worked to remain concealed and oblivious, but to be openly recognized by all and then embraced. And this is what makes wisdom in Proverbs so different. The real challenge is not that wisdom is hard to find. The real challenge is whether we are willing to receive what she has to teach us. When people hear the word wisdom, they often imagine something that's distant or elevated, an achievement that's reserved for scholars or mystics, or the unusually reflective people who kind of just live above the basic noise of ordinary life. But the picture that's given in Proverbs is far more down to earth and urgent. Wisdom is not presented as a private obsession for an elite few. She's not hidden away in a monastery somewhere, locked in a library, or just whispered to the elite educated. She's out in public. She's visible. She stands, in Proverbs chapter 9, says that she stands in the loudest, most crowded places in the city. She's in the market. She's in the square. She's at the gate of the city. She's on the wall. And she's raising her voice. In the ancient world, these were places where real life happened. Business was negotiated, disputes were settled, people exchanged news, families and all the different commerce passed through, and the future of the community there was shaped. That setting mattered, and that's why wisdom chose it. Wisdom's not detached from ordinary life. She speaks directly into its traffic, its pressures, and confusion. The image that is given through the book of Proverbs puts the question this way. If wisdom is speaking so openly, then why is she so often ignored? The issue is not about scarcity, it's about receptivity. Who receives what Proverbs has to offer? Proverbs portrays wisdom as calling out, especially to the simple, the young, the naive, and those lacking judgment. We're going to take a look at those in the next session in more detail. But she talks to these individuals not because they are beyond hope, but because they're the ones who are impressionable. They're the ones to whom her voice can reach. They are standing at these crossroads, Proverbs says, and they're still capable of being formed. It's like watching a young driver wave off the directions that they're being given from an older individual because when they look ahead, they see the road, they know how to drive down it, only to discover that when they get to the end of it, they don't know where they're going next. Wisdom offers what one person has described as substitute experience for life. It's the chance to learn without first being broken and hurt by the unavoidable consequences that life brings. Wisdom, in effect, is offering us the saying, you don't have to touch every fire to know that it will burn you. Yet the invitation by wisdom does not just stop with the inexperienced. Even the wise are told to listen and increase in learning. And that is one of the most humbling features of biblical wisdom, such as in the book of Proverbs. Nobody graduates from its school. Everyone is still in session. The seasoned parent, the successful leader, the prosperous businessman, the respected teacher, the longtime Christian believer, all remain vulnerable to blind spots, pride, self-deception. Wisdom's question is, how long? How long will you wait until you listen to me? Rings an alarming bell. How long will people prefer what is easy, what is flattering, or what is familiar over what is true and good and right? Wisdom's voice is often drowned out, not because her voice is soft or weak, but because there are so many competing voices that promise quicker rewards or better outcomes without the investment, pleasures without the restraint or commitment, certainty without any reflection or understanding. And so the drama is real. Wisdom, though, is available and is generous and is public about what she offers. The question she asks everyone is whether we are going to have the hearts to receive her teaching. And this leads to the question that, well, if wisdom is so public, universal, and available, then why do most people not have it? Is wisdom complicated, or is it really hard to attain? Can wisdom actually be simple? In Scripture, like in the book of Proverbs, wisdom is not this abstraction or complex philosophy. It is just the practical skill of living well in God's world and in alignment with Him. It is this moral intelligence to be able to apply to all ordinary situations and choices. And so in that sense, wisdom can be simple, but don't mistake that for wisdom being simplistic. Wisdom does not require these advanced credentials and letters behind your name, but it does require something of you. It requires an investment. It requires a commitment. It requires determination. A person may have little formal education and yet possess profound wisdom, while another may have shelves of books and all these diplomas and degrees, and yet repeatedly ruin their relationships, mishandle their money, speak carelessly, and refuse to be corrected. Biblical wisdom in Proverbs does not merely ask, "What do you know?" but "How do you live?" At the heart of this vision of wisdom is the conviction that God has built this moral order into creation. And therefore, life is not random or chance the way fools may think it is. Actions have real consequences. And that's why Proverbs uses vivid, almost like tactile and perceived examples. We'll look at some of those in later sessions where it uses some examples from nature, from the cosmos, from agriculture, of like churning butter, churning milk into butter, getting struck on the nose and causing bleeding. There are different pictures that Proverbs draws from real life. We've also looked at the idea of like what it feels like to drink vinegar in your mouth, or what happens if you stand over a fire and the smoke gets in your eyes. But this kind of simple wisdom that Proverbs offers, it contains a degree of complexity to it. Proverbs describes being a learner of wisdom like an animal that pricks up its ears. It is alert and focused, and it's responsive to every sound it hears. And that image is helpful for us and in this setting because it reminds us of how much we have to pay attention to wisdom. Many people have knowledge. Many people are filled with information about the world and how the world works. So how come they're not wise? Well, they are in one sense wise. People who are successful in business are successful not by chance. They're successful by employing good decision making. And that's an aspect of living with wisdom. But it's not the whole package. The whole package requires a lot more. It requires somebody to be teachable. It requires somebody to have discipline. It requires somebody who is willing to do what is hard if it is right. And therefore, a wise person is someone who never truly fails. It's someone who, well, they'll be corrected, and then they will change, and then they'll be strengthened and improved by learning the truth. And then that bridge goes back to the first part of then re-listening to wisdom again in order to learn more. And therefore, the transformation works in a cycle of gaining wisdom, applying wisdom, learning from wisdom, going back to the source and doing it all over again. And then getting wisdom's teaching deeper and deeper into your life. The path to wisdom then is simple. But wisdom itself, while simple, is so deep and wide and rich. And that's why reading Proverbs and other wisdom in the Bible takes time, takes repetition, takes a lot of thinking, because it's not just straightforward. And that's the beauty and the richness and the value of Proverbs. Proverbs and the wisdom in Proverbs is a lifelong learning process. It requires us to be willing to listen, reflect, and then change and rinse and repeat and do it again and again. So if wisdom is out there and it's readily available, and if it's something that is simple, and even you can begin teaching children about wisdom, then where does one go to actually find it? And why should a person focus on the wisdom in the book of Proverbs? The question is, well, what is so wise about Proverbs? If you take Proverbs and the wisdom in it and you line it up next to other wisdom traditions, whether it's ancient philosophies or ancient wisdom literature of the ancient Near East or the far Near East or elsewhere, or maybe if you look to modern wisdom, self-help books or DIY or cultural proverbs of our day, the book of Proverbs doesn't immediately look more sophisticated or, quote, better. At first glance, perhaps it can even seem a little bit too simplistic. There are so many short sayings, just so much common everyday scenarios that are drawn in its sayings, and just recurring life problems. And some of it just even seems like just such common sense. And there's just some of the moral instruction seems just plain straightforward. But to view that simplicity as making it seem as though Proverbs is simplistic, or that would be deceptive. Because what makes Proverbs uniquely and truly wise is not that it says more than every other wisdom tradition out there. It's that it sees deeper into what wisdom truly is than all other traditions. Most of wisdom literature, whether you're talking about ancient or modern, is built on observation. And so is the book of Proverbs. It watches life, it notices patterns, and draws conclusions. A large part of the wisdom is training people to understand, if you do this, then this tends to happen. That's very useful. It's a lot of how-to knowledge, practical knowledge. But Proverbs doesn't stop there. Proverbs goes a step further. It insists that the patterns of life are not random, convenient, or merely social conventions. They're actually rooted in a moral order that precedes us. Wisdom in Proverbs is not just about what works in life. It is about what is right within the world that God has structured and intended life to be lived a certain way. And that shift makes all the difference. Because if wisdom is reduced simply to figuring out the best way life works, then it becomes unhinged and extremely flexible in a dangerous way. For example, if deception works, then why can't deception be a wise strategy? If cutting corners gets even results faster, then doesn't integrity become optional? A lot of modern advice quietly slides in that direction. It teaches ways to be effective without anchoring it in moral reality or having a concern for being in alignment with God's design for life. Proverbs refuses to do that. It ties skillful living directly to godly attributes like righteousness, justice, and integrity. It doesn't let the reader separate personal success and prosperity from the upstanding moral character that God requires of his people. Another difference is how Proverbs handles the person who's seeking wisdom. Many modern approaches to wisdom assume the personal autonomy first. You are the authority. You are searching to define your path. You need to discover your truth. Well, Proverbs starts somewhere else entirely. It starts with the fear of Yahweh. It doesn't begin with autonomy. It begins with submission and humility. As I mentioned already in the class, everybody begins naive and gullible. We're all like open and impressionable, and we're easily persuaded and shaped by whatever seems to influence us most. And that's not just that's not like some sort of insult to us or the way that, you know, we are. Rather, it's just simply a diagnosis of our condition. That's just the way we are at the beginning. And that's why Proverbs emphasizes the need for people to listen, receive correction, and develop discipline. It assumes that without this personal formation, then we will just simply drift. And we won't drift toward wisdom. We'll just drift toward whatever's loudest, easiest, or whatever's most desirable to us in that time, or at that time. Moreover, there's also a durability to Proverbs that sets it apart from the rest of the so-called wisdom, at least especially modern wisdom. Much of modern wisdom is geared toward reactivity. It's tailored to current trends in the world, or common social problems, or maybe cultural tendencies and moments that can be there one day and gone the next. Instead, Proverbs operates at the level of human nature and an unwavering moral foundation. And therefore, it addresses, you know, perennial issues that never go out of style. Issues of pride, laziness, speech, anger, greed, and all other aspects of life. Things that never lose their relevancy. We will never outgrow the wisdom of Proverbs by moving to a different culture or living at a different time, because it's not tied to a particular one. And lastly, Proverbs aims to train not just our behavior, like what we do, but our overall perception and way of thinking about life. It teaches us how to truly see so that we can learn how to discern what's really happening and that we don't get duped or fall prey to superficial appearances, but we're able to anticipate consequences and outcomes. We're able to interpret complex situations and interactions without losing clarity. And we're able to properly order our life relationships so that they can flourish and be healthy. It wants us to achieve not just competency, but real skill in all these areas. And that is actually rarer than one might think. Information is everywhere, especially in our day and time. The ability, though, to discern and make sound judgments is not. So, why prioritize Proverbs? Well, the fact that it's scripture does give it immediate credibility. But beyond that, because it doesn't just give good advice or helpful suggestions, we should prioritize Proverbs in order to learn wisdom because it forms a life framework. And a life framework apart from which we will never truly be able to be wise. And it doesn't just tell us what to do. It seeks to reshape how we understand life and reality itself. And without that deeper reorientation, even the best worldly advice that we could get won't help us solve the most significant issues and questions in life. So where do we begin? If wisdom is calling in the streets, and if wisdom is this practical skill for living, then the next question is unavoidable. Where does a person go to actually begin to go down this journey, down the road of wisdom? Most people, if they are honest, They want wisdom in the same way they want fitness, peace of mind, or good character. They want the result without the required work that is involved. But wisdom does not arrive all at once in some dramatic flash or an epiphany. It builds slowly in one's life over time. It matures with time, circumstances, and experience. It settles into a person as they practice it. In that sense, wisdom is less like finding a hidden treasure in an afternoon, and it's more like finding the map that leads to where the treasure is hidden. Rome was not built in a day, and neither is wisdom and a good life. A person becomes wise only through the steady, repeated practice of seeing things rightly, choosing rightly, and responding rightly until those become just part of their very being and patterns of thought and action. And that is why the beginning of wisdom is not merely external behavior. It's about internal change. A person can mimic wise habits for a while without actually being wise. Someone may learn the right thing to say or know when to remain silent or appear disciplined in public, yet still be ruled inside by envy, pride, impulsiveness, resentment, greed, or vanity. Wisdom requires more than just simply better optics. It demands a restrained heart, and it demands a retrained heart. It changes what a person loves, what they fear, what they notice, and how they interpret events around them. Think of if you're learning how to play a musical instrument. In this analogy that I used before, that it's awkward at first, but the more you do it, the more your hand knows what to do, the more your mind already anticipates what's going to happen next. What seemed first clumsy and unnatural becomes soon a very seamless process. In the same way, wisdom, as it trains our hearts and minds to process the world differently, over time, we just begin to instinctively ask ourselves better questions. What's going on here? What choice will this produce tomorrow? Where is this going to lead if I keep doing it? What kind of person am I becoming if I continue to have this habit or continue this pattern? This gradual development will affect our attitude, perspective, and lifestyle, not just all at once, but gradually over time. Attitude changes first when we become humble, and a wise person must be willing to be taught. Perspective is what changes next. Life is no longer seen only through the lens of maybe immediate gratification or personal success in work or the world, but through understanding consequences, good character, and the truth. And then lifestyle begins to shift. Our speech becomes more measured, more censored. We say things we should, we don't. We hold back on things that we shouldn't. Our relationships become more honest, more deep, more intimate. Our work becomes more diligent, more profitable. Our habits become more consistent and more repeatable. And this often happens gradually so that the person doesn't see the change happening, but it is happening all the same. It's only when you look back and you see that how far you've come does one realize how much wisdom they have gained through practicing it. It's like walking down a long road. No single step seems all that dramatic or you're making all that much progress. Yet enough faithful steps put together, and when you look back, you realize that you are not where you used to be. You're not the person you used to be. And that is where wisdom begins, realizing we're not out to seek perfection. We're out to seek surrendering to the process wisdom demands. It's not an instant mastery that wisdom is asking of us, but it's in willing to do the daily training of our souls to love what is true and love what God has given to us in this world to live it the way He says is best, and for us then to do that. In the next session of the Road of Wisdom, we're going to examine more closely the audience to whom the book of Proverbs is written. We'll see you then.